You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome back to the 750. I am your RJ Ochoa. He is your 75, two-time Super Bowl champion, college football Hall of Famer. Rest primed, ready for football every week for now until forever, seemingly. Tony Casillas, TC, what up?
Man, I don't know about rest, but regardless, it's great to be here with you this morning on a Tuesday. So I'm looking forward. Thursday is the inaugural preseason for the NFL, so I'm excited about that, I guess. Depends on what we see, but because it's going to be a little – but this more importantly excited about this weekend, obviously the Hall of Fame and my former coach Jimmy Johnson getting inducted.
Yeah, I want to get to that. I do want to caution every Dallas Cowboys fan that's super pumped for Thursday, maybe because I know we have a lot of younger listeners too, maybe some people that are still newer to, you know, watching football.
Everyone's going to know who Jimmy Johnson is.
Well, no, that wasn't what I was going to say, but I was going to say, you know, because Thursday, Tony, it's like everything you open on social media is going to be football is back. Football's, you know what I mean? Like that's, and everyone's going to go get their top food choices. They're going to go to their favorite pizza place or favorite wing place or, you know what I mean? They're going to get the whole nine yards and then they're going to come. I actually never understood where that expression comes from, by the way, because wouldn't you want the whole 10 yards? Like generally it's first and 10, but whatever.
Well, I don't know. Where as long as you know, I think football fans have just been, as always, starving for, you know, the NFL or college,
right?
No pun intended, but, you know, I think it's great that now we have something to watch. And
sure,
as we know, there's you're not going to see your start playing a whole lot of the game. But nevertheless, it's just a symbolic. We can actually watch that with obviously the Olympics, which I've been invested in and really been watching that. So this gives people choices, I would say.
I agree. I mean, I'm not complaining that football's back, but where I was getting at before I distracted myself is everyone's going to get all pumped up, Tony. They're going to put on their favorite Cowboys jersey. I saw there was a Casillas jersey floating around Oxnard, by the way. I know Jane Slater was on the case to figure out exactly what the story was there. And everyone's going to sit on their couch and say, football's back. Hell yeah. And then two plays in, people are going to go, this sucks. I do not want to watch this preseason. Bring me the regular season. But still, it's football. It's awesome. What is your favorite memory of the preseason? Or do you?
Well, first of all, it was so funny. You talk about Jane Slater. She actually sent me a picture of that, texted to me. And I was like, well, obviously the guy, he needs to Google, you know, Casillas, because there was a Casillas that actually played on the Cowboys. But that's, you know, Casillas, I guess, is a very common name. So it was good to see him had number 33 on. At least that's one of the greatest of all time, if Tony Dorsett, if that's who he's running. But I thought it was funny to see that, nevertheless.
Maybe he had that jersey because he found out you bought a Tony Dorsett jersey. You know what I'm saying? So he merged the two worlds.
If we want to spin it that way, I'll ride along with you on that one. That sounds great. But I just thought it was funny because I think if you go to watch training camp, it's a great place to be. But to the point of preseason, my best memory is when it was over. I'm not going to lie to you. You know, it was an era where I think Bill Johnson brought up the point is that you went through training camp, you had to get your legs back. It was almost like a twofold. You had to get your legs back because training camp is so rich and hard. So you had to really just kind of retrain yourself to get ready for the regular season game. But, you know, I always thought the best part of preseason is the ending. Obviously, you need, you know, the reps. And I've mentioned this before. You have to get your body acclimated to the physicality of it. But it's a necessary evil. I think it's more RJ for evaluation of younger players and people that, you know, players are going to maybe make your roster. But other than that, it's at times you think it's senseless. But the reason why they have preseason games is because it's TV revenue and people watch it and they love it.
That's true. TV revenue is all the rage in all levels of football, especially the world of college football right now. But it is what it is. Speaking of TV, I cut the cord, but that's a whole different subject. We can talk about that offline. I feel liberated. But the Dallas, this preseason game on Thursday, the Pro Football Hall of Fame game, will take place on Fox. Generally, that game's been on ESPN, so things are just a little bit different. But everybody know it's on Fox. We will have an article available for you, Blogging the Boys, in case you are confused. We let you know how to watch and how to listen to it. But that's the game. But as mentioned, Tony, I think the thing everyone's looking forward to the most is the enshrinement ceremony on Saturday, because Jimmy Johnson's finally going to get to go in. There's been a lot of great material floating around, you know, the internet, different spaces, different media spaces, in the lead up to Jimmy's enshrinement. I saw Bob Sturm had a great piece over at The Athletic where you were a part of it. A lot of different, you know, former Cowboys players from that time just kind of told some Jimmy stories. Did you see the story, the second story that Troy told to Bob Sturm?
You know what? I know that Bob, because he reached out to me and I was part of his piece, but I have not read it yet. But I will now that you mentioned that. But I mean, there's so many great stories about Jimmy. I'm just curious to what Troy had to say.
Well, so Troy, I don't know if you feel cheated, Tony, but Bob let Troy tell two stories about Jimmy. So I know the rest of you got one.
I told a lot of great stories. I guess you had to pick the best one, but if you're the greatest of all time quarterback for the Cowboys, then I guess you get two stories.
Sure. So the second one, Troy said, and again, everybody go read this story in The Athletic, that he was in the Bahamas, and after the Super Bowl in 93, you guys are back-to-back world champions, you guys are on top of the world, and Troy said he was there fishing with some friends, and he said that Jimmy had set him up with this GM at the Crystal Palace Hotel and Casino. I don't know if you've ever been there, Tony, but obviously Troy had a good time here as the back-to-back Super Bowl champion-winning quarterback. But Troy said he was up $10,000 on the gambling table when he got back to his room. He said he didn't have his workout for the next day. This is kind of what I thought was fascinating. So I don't know if you guys would have these like printed out or something, or like you just would write down your workout or something. But Troy said, so he called, you know, your strength coach at the time and, you know, said, hey, I need my workout, you know, and he actually said, this is the line, can you fax me my workout for tomorrow so I can get it in?
True story.
And Troy said that he on the message he left, he said, oh, by the way, if you run into Jimmy at the facility, tell him I'm kicking their ass on the tables. And he hung up. And so he said the next morning they went deep sea fishing. And so they left really early. And he said he's waiting for his friends in the front of the hotel or wherever. And the GM of the casino goes out to him and says, hey, when you get back, coach says he's going to meet you at the tables. And Troy was like, what are you talking about? And the guy says, Jimmy Johnson, and he's coming over here. He's going to meet you at the table. So apparently Troy talking crap about being up on the tables inspired Jimmy to just fly down to the Bahamas. That's just the kind of life Jimmy Johnson leads.
Well, it's kind of, I'm kind of curious that did Troy take home that $10,000? Did Jimmy, who won the most money? All I know is that anytime you get emotional at a casino, your ass is going to lose. I just know that by my experience. So hopefully it worked out for both those guys. But yeah, so I obviously vividly remember the fax days. And that would be Mike Worsick, our strength and conditioning coach at the time. But you know, that's kind of how competitive Jimmy Johnson was, because here's Troy. And he's in the Bahamas at this casino and he's kicking, you know, the dealer's butt ass. Up $10,000. And here's this coach, Jimmy Johnson, that says, you know, at the time, maybe he may have been the keys or whatever it may be. And it's like, I'm just going to go over and see, I'm going to one up you. So it's really interesting because, you know, through all these stories that we tell about Jimmy, you can embellish a little bit, but they're most of the time they're on point and they're true.
Right. You know, the most heartbreaking part of reading this was the story that Bob put at the end. And again, the whole thing was really awesome, is Troy said to Bob that, you know, that was when he really felt like things were really just at their all time high in terms of his relationship with Jimmy. It's obviously been well chronicled how Jimmy recruited him twice in college and Troy didn't want to play for him and obviously had to in the NFL. And Troy said that was the last time that he saw Jimmy before he went to the owners' meetings that spring when him and Jerry had their fight that obviously led to Jimmy's departure from the team. And so he said that was the last time he ever saw him as the Dallas Cowboys head coach. It's really just, you know, when I was reading that story, I didn't expect that twist to kind of hit at the very end. There was also a great story, Tony, over at ESPN on Monday about the origins. And this was something I really wanted to ask you about. Of Jimmy's How About Them Cowboys. And the article did such a great job at setting up, and Todd Archer wrote it, really fantastic piece again over at ESPN.com, about the moment. Obviously, you win the NFC Championship game, you're going to the Super Bowl, and that line that Jimmy says is so symbolic. It's become, I mean, like to say it's become a catchphrase, I don't think is like quantifies what it is. It's become like an identity of the Cowboys almost. What was that moment like? I mean, can you walk us through the How About Them Cowboys, kind of what you felt and kind of how everybody felt, what you remember from that day when you beat the 49ers?
Well, first of all, I always thought it was just interesting that you have these different coaches that can coin these phrases that will live forever. And it was just in the moment after that we won the game and just came out of his mouth. And little do we know, 20-something years later, you know, that's going to be the phrase. And to me, would have a patent on something that's been said so many times. And everyone identifies with that, different generations. Now, obviously, it meant a lot more to us back then because we just won the NFC Championship. So it kind of perpetuated. And I just remember, you know, in that 49ers game, we were underdog. And just the whole backdrop of the game, it was – it was a monsoon rain, there was an earthquake, and, you know, we ended up winning the game versus San Francisco. And I just remember there was this, you know, Jimmy was always a guy that made you pay attention to the little things. I mean, people hear that all the time, but it's really true. I mean, you can be the best team, you can be, you know, you can overmatch someone, and as, you know, the 49ers were, but it's a little thing. So he really just honed in on that. But I just, you know, to me, people ask me, so, well, what's your fondest memory of your career? And I said, well, really, the Super Bowls with the Cowboys, but really it was the NFC Championship game, because then you actually knew that you realized that you're going to go on the next step, the Super Bowl. It just, when he said that, it was just this catastrophic, just celebration. And, you know, today it's something very vivid that sticks in your mind, because you're in that locker room, you're around a coach that really just commanded you to do the little things and do the things a lot of people wouldn't do for just another coach because they just didn't connect that way. But I'm just amazed that it's still stuck for this many years. And I was thinking about this when I read that article. It's like, that's one of those phrases that you want to patent and copyright because it's been used so many times. It's almost like, you know, maybe this is an extreme, but it's like Michael Buffer. Let's get ready to rumble. I mean, it's right. Something that, you know, with Cowboy fans, it you know, resurrects with them. Right. And really just connects with them. But, you know, it was just one of those feelings of just, you realize that, dude, we're going to go play in a Super Bowl. And that dude right there realized that. And, you know, Jimmy wasn't a very, you know, he was emotional, but he really he kind of put his guard down when he really felt like that he accomplished something, because that's what he, and I think that's so great about seeing him when he found out he got inducted to the Hall of Fame, to see those emotions pour out and the breakdown. And then just really it's a touching moment for everyone.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think a lot of Cowboys fans maybe hold the memory of the first NFC Championship game a little bit closer to their hearts than even the Super Bowls. And, you know, I know several of you guys have spoken about that over the years, about how it was just like beating Buffalo was kind of a formality, right? Like it was like we beat the 49ers. Like who were the Buffalo Bills? You know, like we're not worried about these Buffalo Bills. A lot of like, you know, the road to the Super Bowl went through the NFC in those times, even if it wasn't Dallas and San Francisco, Green Bay, obviously a heavy hitter at the time. And so I find that so fascinating. You know, I remembered that the patent happened fairly recently. Todd Archer noted that it wasn't until 2016. That was really shocking to me that, you know, that it took from, you know, the early days of 1993 until 2016 for a patent to be filed on How About Them Cowboys, which a lot of like, it's kind of like America's team. Like a lot of fans try to rip it off. Like, you know, there's a lot of like people in those fan bases that'll be like, man, how about them Bengals? It's like, that's the dumbest thing of all time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, not the same. No, it won't work.
But that is, I mean, my takeaway from that, just again, you know, as a fan watching, is it does seem like he was so, like, I mean, he was such a master of I don't want to say psychological warfare. I mean, you lived it, but to show like such a level of like pride and excitement and euphoria had to be, you know, I know he was like that with you guys, but it had to be a different thing in that moment, because everybody who was a part of that moment, yourself included, always talks about how it was just a different side of him that people saw, as opposed to like the other stories that we hear and that you tell, like the story you told Bob Sturm, you know, about the flight home from Washington. Like it's amazing that that's the same person, you know what I mean? That would cut guys for no reason. That was, you know, to your point, now realizing that you guys were headed to the Super Bowl. I mean, it's the coolest thing ever.
Well, here's my analogy, RJ, is that when I look at Jerry Jones, how successful he's been as an owner, it seems to me he's always two steps ahead of everyone else, or one step ahead of everyone else, and as far as his branding. And that was kind of like Jimmy. Jimmy was always one step ahead of everyone else because he's always thinking, you know, what I need to do to keep these guys motivated and keep them humble. And I think that that's what he did. And all these stories that are told about Jimmy, they're fascinating. I think that he realized, and you know, I have a podcast, and I have him on this week, and we're going to do a prelude to the, you know, the Super Bowls, that I asked him, and you know, he's very competitive. So I started asking him questions. I said, well, you know, because he's a big fisherman, and he told me he likes to go fishing by himself. That's a way he kind of decompresses himself. And he told me about the time that he caught this big marlin, and he got, you know, these stories that he tells you, but you're thinking, you went fishing by yourself and you landed this 275 pound marlin, swordfish, whatever it may be. And he goes, yeah. And, but that's the way he was. He's very competitive in what he does. But I think now when he looks back at it, I think that he realizes that the appreciation that everyone has played for him. It's like, coach, you know, that wasn't, as you call, psychological welfare. That was you motivating a group of guys that needed you, that needed that tough love and everything else that went along with it. So we can tell the stories, because to me, the stories are better and bigger whenever you have accomplishments and you see someone like Jimmy. And like, I don't know if that would work in today's football environment because it's changed so much, because I think it's more on the players to do it and not the coach. And I may be a little off base with that, because people need a coach to be very judgmental and tell them, you know, this is the way we're going to do things. But, you know, everything that the stories are told, or we're not fabricating them that whole lot. You know, it's not fabricating, but we're not exaggerating them. They're really, really true. And so how many times can you do that? I mean, I could sit here and tell a story, and I can twist it and turn it and make it a better story. But, you know, Jimmy, that was the best part about him, RJ. He's authentic. And it's like, you know, if you don't like me, you know, I really don't care. I mean, I asked him, I said, you know what? I said, and also I asked him, this is Jimmy Johns. I asked him, I said, Coach, what do you want to be remembered as? And the people, when he goes, man, he goes, Tony, I really don't care about what people think about me. I know that what I've done and what I accomplished. He goes, man, I don't care. It's like, that makes sense, because who everyone gets asked that question. But he's like, hey, I don't really care what other people think about me. And he's like, yeah, I believe that. That's true.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You know, I think you hear so often in sports, I was going to say the NFL, but like people that say, like, you know, I just want to win. Like, winning's all that matters. Like, winning's the most important thing. Like, one of the coolest things that Tom Brady says, I mean, and only Tom Brady, because this is, you know, when he's asked, like, what his favorite Super Bowl ring is, he says, the next one, right? Like, that's the one. Like, I'm obsessed with winning. And that's, like, Jimmy was kind of the first cut of people like that, it feels like, and at least a long time. Because Jimmy, I feel like, was the introduction of the NFL to a new era. Because every great head coach to that point in time had been this really stoic, reserved personality. Obviously, Vince Lombardi, Tom Landry, Chuck Knoll, Bill Walsh, people, you know, that kept things kind of close to the vest. And here's Jimmy, you know, chugging Heinekens and, you know, out here cussing dudes out and bragging about it. You know what I mean? Wearing short shorts and having polished hair. And that, one of the other stories I wanted to ask you about, because I know, you know, you guys all talked to Bob Sturman, told different, you know, just stories about Jimmy, kind of the person. And then the Todd Archer's piece was about How About Them Cowboys, which was after the 92 title game. But a story that I honestly feel like doesn't get talked about enough was the guarantee in 93. And I've never asked you this before, but like, what was that like? How did you find out? And just for younger fans, like we kind of joked about early, you guys are going into the title game in 93 against the 49ers, this time at Texas Stadium. And Jimmy, you know, the legend is he's listening to local sports talk radio, driving, I think, to dinner, and just listening to people talk about, like, man, you know, it's going to be a close game. You know, the 49ers are really going to hang with the Cowboys, might beat them. And so he just says, like, this is stupid. And he calls in and tells them, you know, guarantees, we're going to win the game. And what, I mean, he says, you know, you can put it in 3-inch bold letters, you know, on the front of the paper. And they do. Well, I mean, what was all that like? Did you get a copy of the paper? Like, I mean, what was your experience with that story like?
Well, first of all, when we found out about it, we're like asking each other how high did Jimmy have before that statement. And yeah, I think that we really didn't think much about it. I think that he did say something in the and kind of reference to that. It's like, hey, you know, I need you guys to back me and what I said, so don't prove me wrong. We're like, okay, we got you. But you know, I think that that's the confidence he had. I think that the brilliance of a great coach is being able to, as I said, be one step ahead of everyone else and always have this alternative, you know, goal, whatever it may be, you know, whatever his agenda was to motivate you. And I think at that point, he really felt like we're the better team. So he's like, I don't mind saying that. I mean, we are a better team. And I'm like, amazing. Okay, yeah. And what does that tell you? Dude had confidence in his team. He wasn't afraid to put himself out there. Because if you look on the flip side, had we not won that game, man, who knows? But, you know, I think that you have to have people to back you. And I think that he said that because he really felt confident that we would, you know, we would beat San Francisco. And obviously we did. And to this day, it's just part of his whole legacy.
See, like, I don't know of another coach like that, like in that would, you know, would, like, people have made guarantees, but, like, you know, it's different, right? Like, it's different, you know, it's even different to say, like, I don't know, like, if you're Alabama, we're going to beat Auburn in the Iron Bowl, right? Like, it's not the same, right? It's not the same to be the reigning world champs going up against, you know, this great 49ers team, whatever, like, as the, like, there's no platform larger than being the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, so to do that, it's just really, like bold doesn't even cover it. And so, and it's one of those, like, I feel like there have been people who have tried to mimic Jimmy in the years that have gone by. I think maybe the closest example in terms of, like, not wannabes, but people who have tried really hard is Rex Ryan. Like, Rex really tried to be that, you know, boisterous, I don't give a rat's ass, you know, I'm going to just tell you what I think type thing. But to your point, Rex guaranteed a lot of things that backfired and blew up in his face. And so, like, now, you know, people think of that. I mean, Jimmy was the ultimate, like, shoot your shot, call your shot guy. And I have to imagine that had to be, like, really inspiring for you guys. Like, if you had any doubt, not that you did, going into that second title game, like, you had to feel like, if this dude is willing to do this for us, like, of course we're going to go out there and kick their ass.
And I think that's what we felt like that we could always do, because we had this coach that was so passionate about the game, was so passionate about competition and detail and everything goes along with that. And, you know, there's only one Jimmy Johnson. You can't use his, you know, his repertoire, or, you know, his
style,
you know, the things that he really, the novelty of it, you know, the fact that he was able to come up with these different anecdotes or whatever. I'm trying to think of what, you know, these things that he used to motivate and things he said, and you can't emulate that, because it's only that's the original one. And look, if you got to build your own legacy. And I think he was the one that really, really felt like that this was his legacy and felt like he had this big plan. And I thought it was interesting when I was doing my interview on my podcast, I asked him about the whole breakup with Jerry. And he goes, Tony, you know, I already had my mind made up that this 94 is going to be my last year. And I'm like, really? And so his whole deal is, like, he is so invested in what he's trying to accomplish emotionally, physically. And I think at the end of the day, it's very, you know, draining for him. And but I think that's kind of what he did to the players. I mean, he drained us from everything. You're talking about draining a swamp, man. I mean, he drained every alligator, every snake, everything out of there to accomplish what he needed to do.
I mean, I feel like I know you could go on forever and ever with stories. The last one I wanted to ask about, because it doesn't sound like, I mean, I know that you guys were really inspired by him in a lot of different ways. And you mentioned nobody could ever replicate or emulate what he did, whether it be positive or negative, psychological warfare, whatever. The Kervin Richards story is one that also gets told a lot. And I feel like that's an important piece to who Jimmy was as a coach. Like, you can't, I feel like it's actually unfair to Jimmy to just look at the how about them Cowboys moment, the guarantees, and say he was just this, like, boisterous guy, because you talk so much about how he demanded competition and he demanded excellence. Again, for anyone who doesn't know, Kervin Richards, running back on y'all's team, the final regular season game in 1992, you guys are already the top seed in the NFC. You're playing the Chicago Bears, correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was a meaningless game. And Kervin Richards fumbles twice because Emmett's not playing. And, you know, not an ideal thing by any means. And not that Kervin Richards was going to play a lot in the playoffs with Emmitt Smith there. But Jimmy cuts him. And Jimmy cuts him because he doesn't want a dude who's going to fumble, despite the fact that he couldn't fill that roster spot heading into the playoffs. Just simply rather wanted to move on without Kervin Richards to avoid having that near his team. Like, I have to, like, that if I was in that locker room with you, like, at Valley Ranch in that moment, and somebody comes in and says, oh, Tony, TC, man, Jimmy cut Kervin Richards, or, like, that would have sent a chill up my spine. Like, I would have been freaked out. You know what I mean? Like, what was that like?
Well, I think it was one of those questions you ask yourself. That could have been me, or if I do something, because you got to remember, there's a lot of role players. It's not just all the franchise guys, right, established players. It's everyone that has a role. And most of those, 85% of your team is made up of those guys. And so whatever your role may be, this whole deal is like, I got to be able to trust you. Okay. Mm-hmm. If that happens. And I think that he felt like, I think we had, I'm trying to think of who the other running back was. That Lincoln Coleman was the next year, I believe. But anyway, he felt like they always had to send messages to everyone else. And it had to resonate with you. And you have to always, again, it's all about being uncomfortable and not having any security. For some reason, he was expert on being able to do that, to manipulate you, mm-hmm, if you will. But the better story is, I don't know if you've heard this one before, is when he mentioned the Chicago Bears, John Roper. I don't know if you ever heard his story, but we signed John Roper, and he was a special teams guy / linebacker. He's a pretty good player. Well, special teams was one of the biggest aspects of our team.
Joe Avizzano. Oh yeah.
Joe Avizzano was the, he was the special teams whisperer, aficionado. I mean, special teams meant really, really was relevant back then. So everyone would go to, Joe's meeting. The night before the Saturday night for our game, on the road or at home, everyone had to go to Joe's special teams meeting. And it was like Joe was a head coach. So during the week, John Roper was in a special teams meeting with Joe Avizzano. And he was sitting there, watching film. And Jimmy kind of snuck in behind him and was like sitting behind him. And all of a sudden, John Roper didn't see Jimmy. So John Roper decides that he wants to take a nap. So John Roper is just sleeping in the special teams meeting with Jimmy Johnson sitting behind him. Jimmy taps him on the shoulder, says, Hey, John, you know what? Why don't you go in the locker room and take a nap? So John gets up, and he cut him before that day's practice because he fell asleep. So those are the things that Jimmy would do. He just brought him in and like, John, hey, you know what? Now he went on to say later that if that would have been Troy, just waking him up and said, hey, Troy, you ever watch a film? But that's what he did. The Kervin Richards example is a perfect example of how he connected. But John Rope, I felt sorry for him, but I don't know if a lot of people ever tell that story, but that's a true story.
I mean,
he just fell asleep at the wrong time.
Right. And I mean,
I had timing.
I just like those stories, the Kervin Richards, the John Roper story. If I have to imagine, I have to believe that, every player on that team, with the exceptions that you talk about, like Troy knew he had a different standing, but to Troy's credit, he did his part. He never took advantage of that. Right. But I have to imagine, you mentioned that's 85% of your team, right? Is these, guys who are all contributing to the overall cause, that had to constantly, like the Kervin Richards example to me, like you have to, in that moment, think like, oh, hell yeah, we're the top seed in the NFC. We've got a first round bye. We're going to kick everybody's asses. Let's chill. And then you find out that somebody gets cut. You know what I mean? Like if you had any idea of resting or losing a shred of focus, like that has to dial you back in. And to your point, he was a master manipulator in the like purpose, in the vein of getting the most out of you guys, which he clearly did.
Yeah. In 92 is our first Super Bowl win. So think about Kervin Richards, who fumbled the ball and got cut. Didn't have the opportunity to go to the playoffs, to go to the Super Bowl because of a mistake. And I mean, I'm sure Swerving Kervin was thinking, he wasn't even thinking about it. It's probably the least thing he was worried about. But, so the message was, is that we're not going to make mistakes. We're not going to get beat by mistakes like that. Mental errors, especially. We're not going to have the, I'm not going to tolerate that. And so even as you mentioned, you talk about Troy and I mentioned like him tapping him on the shoulder. Hey, Troy, wake up and not tell him to go in the locker room and then cut him because that's not going to happen. But I think people respected that because they knew that that's what Jimmy expected. And I think most importantly of this whole thing is that he commanded structure. And when you were in that building, there was structure. there was discipline, and everyone knew that that was Jimmy's way of running a football team.
So, I mean, this just has to be, I imagine Saturday will be a very cool day for you all. I mean, you know, it's a day for all of you. I mean, it's a day for Jimmy, and obviously Jimmy's at the center of it, but it has to feel like, it has to feel like the final piece. You know what I mean? Like everything's finally where it needs to be. Jimmy's finally in the Hall of Fame. I know this is a drum you've all beaten forever. I know every Cowboy from your team who's in the Hall of Fame in their speech has said Jimmy needs to be in here, etc. What will you feel on Saturday? What will TC be feeling in the old Corazon?
I just think it's a time where everyone can just really show their appreciation and really just as you mentioned, it's an amazing feat for Jimmy's record. When you look at Jimmy's record, it's not one of the best records in the National Football League. And look at all the other Hall of Fame coaches are in, but it's how he accomplished it. And what he did for the evolution of the Dallas Cowboys in the 90s. And I think that that's really kind of how he's transcended this whole thing. You know, Jimmy was a guy that had his hands on everything from GM duties to player personnel to everything. I mean, he was one of those guys, and I think that he did something for each person. And we could tell the crazy Jimmy Johnson stories and the discipline and everything he had, but really the fact that he brought me into Dallas and gave me an opportunity, it's a good, great way for us to put him on a pedestal and really just give thanks to what he's done. And to see that, I mean, the accomplishment of what he's been able to do with that team and ultimately where it is now. I think that there's so many people that should appreciate what the man has done, because he made a lot of personnel decisions. There's a lot of tough love, and there's a lot of decisions that he made that probably, I don't know if he regrets it, but I think every player that was part of that whole fraternity will think, you know, I was part of it. And I think that that's what he really, when I talked to him, is that he really wants people to realize that it wasn't just me. It was a staff, his administration, it was the players. And when you connect all those things, you felt like you're part of him getting into the National Football League because you had something to do with that. So I think that's the biggest compliment that all the players can have. And just be proud of a man so deserving that's going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing how other people on the staff have become legendary in their own right. We talked about Joe Avizzano, obviously Dave Wanstead, North Turner, who's had an incredible career afterwards. Rich Dalrymple, Jimmy's guy, I mean, continues to obviously, be the GOAT. I just it's cool. I mean, it's really, really exciting to see how this is all going to unfold. Obviously, it's been a long time coming, obviously in general, but just with the fact that we've had to wait an entire year because of COVID and whatnot. I'm really excited to see what he has to say. I have to imagine he'll be somewhat emotional, and I just, I don't know, this is a really cool moment as a Dallas Cowboys fan. Like, you know, it does feel, and I feel like it does get lost. And you said it, that Jimmy re-catapulted the brand of the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, Jerry's done an incredible job, and I don't want to make this about Jerry, but I mean, he's obviously done an amazing job at fortifying the brand. But people forget that when you guys got there, like, it was not glitzy and glamoury. Like, yes, they were America's team, but like, they were not this world dominant brand at the time. I mean, they had fallen off. It kind of feels like, have you seen the new Space Jam? I haven't, but have you seen the new one?
No, I don't know if I'll watch it. Right. I hear it's good, but it's kind of like,
you've seen the original though, right? Obviously.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But I had a lot of people that the new one and the old one and said, it's kind of like Jimmy. You just can't emulate and
right.
Sequel to something right. That was so good.
Well, you remember in the original, when Jordan first gets to the gym with all the Looney Tunes and it's like this piece of crap, and Jordan's like, this is the gym, and they're like, oh, all it needs is a little spit shine, you know what I mean? And they all start like spitting and hawking at it, whatever, and then it's like beautiful and glamorous. It feels like Jimmy gave the Cowboys a spit shine, you know what I mean? And like, and then as soon as like he was done and he left, I mean, all of a sudden it's this beautiful diamond in the NFL, you know, like it, I don't want to say y'all were a spit shine, but like, that's kind of like, that was his approach in some ways.
Yeah. And I think also when I watch him give a speech, I think we'll be able to relive those moments again. Relive 25 years, however long it's been since he's been out of coaching, since he led us to Super Bowl, we'll be able to relive those moments. And really, it's almost like we're putting them up on our shoulders and celebrating again because of what he was able to accomplish. So I think that that's something that will be interesting. And really what he's going to say, I think it'll be pretty epic to be able to watch that. And I'm excited to see it. It's going to be a great celebration. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go or not, because I just think that it's one of those deals that that'll be hard to be around it and embrace it because there's just so much stuff going on. But I think we are going to try to have something back in Dallas where we can all just the players get together and celebrate it, where it's more intimate, if that makes sense.
That kicks ass. Like that, I guarantee you, like every Dallas Cowboys fan thinks that's the coolest thing ever, that y'all still get together, break bread, drink water, surely. Just tell stories.
You're talking
laugh.
About water and tequila? Yes.
I mean, have you ever, like, are you a Heineken guy? Like, were you ever inspired to take up Heineken because of Jimmy specific? Because I guarantee you there is a Dallas Cowboys fan somewhere that drinks Heineken as gross as it is because Jimmy Johnson is a Heineken guy.
You know what? I never did. I never really just wanted to pattern myself after Jimmy Johnson, especially when it comes to beer, because there's not really a beer I don't like. But it's a good beer. But I think it's the way he, you know, the whole tag with it, the Heinekens right. And the nachos and everything. And, you know, we could do a 3-hour podcast, just stories about Jimmy. I mean, I could sit here and rattle off so many of these stories, but you know, that's the uniqueness of it. I mean, everyone has to have a story. Everyone has to have how they got there and how this thing all formulated and the story, the ending. And I just think it's a great ending story to this book about Jimmy Johnson finally getting in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Hopefully the Ring of Honor will follow that shortly. But it's kind of like what Troy said. It's like, I don't really think that he cares about the Ring of Honor anymore. He said, you know, I'm in the Hall of Fame, Pro Football Hall of Fame. And so this is something that this is the end of my book. This is into everything as far as my football career. And so that's the thing I'm excited about, RJ.
My last question, and then we'll wrap up and get out of here. Obviously this is Jimmy's choice, but he picked Troy to present him. I know he has Terry Bradshaw, like he has a fleet of people that are part of it, whatever, but Troy is the one presenting him. If you could have picked his presenter, I know that's a weird question, but would you have picked Troy? Is that the person that, because you've talked so much about how Troy, you know, was y'all's quarterback and what he meant to you guys. Like, I have to believe that for all of you, it feels right that Troy is the one presenting him.
It feels right, but I got to be honest with you. I'm surprised. I'd be someone closer to him. Not that Troy's not close to
right.
him. So I thought maybe it would be one of his family members or someone like that, but I just think that him and Troy are really close. I think that they understand the perception of them. Not if you watch the football life, you watch the Troy story, you know, the time that he was, you know, when we got our asses kicked by the Detroit Lions, the divisional game, and Steve Berline was a quarterback, and, you know, Troy was fine with his knee and he wanted to play. But then you fast forward and you're like, well, it did surprise him, but it doesn't. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, you know, because those guys came in together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both were on the same wavelength. They both like structure. They it's black and white to them. You mentioned Stoic. Troy was in some way Stoic in a good way because mm-hmm. he kind of had that persona where it's all business and this is how I'm going to motivate. So they had similar personalities, if you will. So I think, yeah, I think if anyone that you would select to present you, or because I understand Terry's the one that's going to present him in, and he's doing an introduction on video that he did, that, yeah, it makes a lot of sense because those guys built this thing. I mean, you have to have everything else to go along with it, but they've been through a lot and they spent a lot of time together. And they kept in touch for a long time. And, you know, they're, to me, they're a lot alike. So it makes a lot of sense that he would do that. Not That's in a bad awesome. Way. I just, right. I mean, Troy's, I mean, I love Troy. Troy's done, he's a great teammate and he's a great friend. So, I mean, it's a huge honor. And could you imagine of all the people that either, you know, anyone would select to present him in the Hall of Fame that you got picked. And I think that's what Troy said. He said, look, it's one of the biggest honors I've ever got to be able to be part of that celebration. And think about it. All the people he could have picked, Troy, Jimmy Johnson, and he selects Troy Aikman. Think about that huge honor.
Yeah. But
yeah. It's only appropriate that that he would be the guy.
I mean, Troy is obviously such a product of the coaching tree. I mean, Emmett and Irv both chose Jerry to present them. Troy chose North Turner. You know what I mean? So like Troy has always been there. And so it is very cool.
Well, very you nice. Know what? When I think about it, I always thought, you know, Michael Irvin was he was played for him at Miami. I thought, well, right. maybe if he did select someone from, you know, the franchise that was part of the 90s dynasty, maybe it'd be Michael Irvin, but again, Troy Aikman, can't go wrong with that dude. I mean, he's probably he'll nail it, knock it out of the park.
Nah, and I mean, what a win for Fox, because this, you know, the Pro Football Hall of Fame games on Fox. They have Troy from Fox presenting Jimmy from Fox. That's a nice week to be Fox. It's really awesome.
But you know, I think it's kind of interesting the way they did it. You know, the Thursday night game, and not a Saturday game because the induction is on Saturday. I just thought it was kind of interesting the way they did it.
So they flipped that, I think 5 years ago, because they used to do the game on Sunday after
right.
the ceremony, but the field was a disaster.
Because they
have the ceremony on the field and it gets all beat up because everybody, so like, that's why they started putting the game before it. But yeah, it will be cool. 4 preseason games for the Dallas Cowboys. Next week, Tony, we're going to have a football game to talk about and react to. Are you excited?
I am. It'd be interesting to see what the top topics would be and what would be breaking down.
Well, whatever they are, we will be breaking them down. Tony,
we have football. That's the most important thing, correct?
We have football. Oklahoma is so jealous of A&M. They had to join the SEC. It's cool. You know, it's a big deal, whatever. Tony, have a great week. Everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week. This was the 750.
Support for this show comes from Wix Studio. Designers and devs, you might be able to do your thing better on Wix Studio, a web platform with everything you need to deliver bespoke sites hyper-efficiently. Design teams get a ton of smart features that can take the grind out of web creation without it costing per pixel control. Dev teams, you get a zero setup, developer-first environment, combined with an AI code assistant and your preferred IDE for rapid deployment. Search Wix Studio today to explore the full range of features.
Support for this podcast came from SAS. Data is everything. And now everything is data, which means more to process, more to analyze. And now more than ever, speed to answers matters. So how do you produce those answers as fast as the world produces data? With SAS Viya, the quickest way from a billion points of data to a point of view. It's a more productive data and AI platform that helps you get more done. Learn more today at sas.com/VIYA.